Coming up on the Inside Indiana Business Television podcast, Huntingburg celebrates success despite pandemic problems. Indiana Landmarks looks to save a historic high school. A local initiative aims to help Black-owned businesses. Indiana launches a service to help treat mental health issues brought on by the pandemic. A former battery factory is now home to two innovative schools. We review an eventful week in Indiana sports. And the Insiders looks at help for displaced Hoosier workers. Welcome to the Inside Indiana Business Television podcast. I'm Andy Ober. The pandemic is putting enormous financial strain on Indiana cities and towns as they grapple with revenue drops and job losses. But Huntingburg in DuBois County is celebrating tens of millions of dollars in investments. Mayor Denny Spinner joined Inside Indiana Business host Gary Dick to talk about how the city is weathering the storm.
I want to get into some of these big announcements this week in your community. But first of all, give us some perspective. The pandemic obviously impacting communities of all sizes, but, you know, especially hard for smaller communities around the state.
Gary, you know, we just went through the budget process like many other communities in Indiana are doing at this time. I can't tell you it's been probably the most challenging budget time in my term as mayor because of the uncertainty about the amount of revenues that are going to be available to us not only in 2021, but 2022. But what we have experienced is that we've got to find ways to continue to provide the services that cities and normally provide to their constituents, to their taxpayers, and find creative ways to do that and not shy away from continuing to invest in those important things. Infrastructure are projects, quality of life projects are things that need to be part of our plan. And we need to continue as communities, yeah, as community leaders, to think about ways to do that in this post-COVID environment. And it's challenging. But we have to be bold and think about what those investments are as we move forward.
Right. Well, let's talk about this because late in the week on Friday, you really cut the ribbon on the final Stellar Communities project. You were named a Stellar Community City by the state 6 years ago. And since that time, you've leveraged projects that sparked private sector investment of over $50 million, amazing projects. You cut the ribbon on the Heritage Trail, the 4th Street Heritage Trail. Talk about these projects, series of projects in downtown Huntingburg.
Well, the 4th Street Heritage Trail was the dedication this week, and it also triggered the kind of the end of the Stellar era, the Stellar projects, eight distinct projects that came together in the city of Huntingburg, with the majority of that investment, at least in infrastructure in our downtown. Huntingburg had a beautiful downtown. We went from having a strong downtown to how do we reinvest in that? The 4th Street Heritage Trail is a project that was funded partially by NDOT along with local private funds. And what that did is transform our downtown into what we think we should be in the future. We took care of all the infrastructure issues that were part of an aging downtown, but also made some very strong quality of life statements, tying it closely to the Market Street Park project and creating an atmosphere in the downtown. We call it Destination Huntingburg. It's a way we want to invite people to come down and make that visit to Huntingburg. But we also want to invite our businesses to continue to make that investment. And it's happening.
Okay.
And even in these difficult times, there's investment happening. There's improvements happening in the buildings that are on 4th Street. And it's all part of the commitment that the city made is being followed up by that private investment.
Well, let's talk about, because you feel there could be a post-pandemic bounce of sorts in Huntingburg, in part because of the projects you've done. Hunter's Crossing is a major residential development. You've got some apartments and lofts as well. And you feel that Huntingburg is positioned to welcome people who maybe want to leave that urban living environment and come to a smaller community.
Well, Gary, you know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when we started this process, it was a good idea. It really was a great idea. It was a chance for us to think big and think outside of the box. And we were doing all these things to secure the future of our community. Little did we know in 2020 that what change would happen and what that post-COVID environment would be like. We talked about the concept of people working from home and that could happen. Well, it's happening. That is happening now. We talked about people wanting to be back into a little less of an urban environment where they have a little bit more control, but they want quality of life issues that they can still address and live in a rural area. And that's happening. So I think that communities like Huntingburg, our neighbor to the north, Jasper, has done the same thing. Several communities across the state have made this investment. And I hope that we as rural communities in Indiana are prepared for that post-COVID experience, that when people make those choices about where they live and work, that rural Indiana is something that's really, very attractive to be a part of. And you know, our commitment was there, but the state of Indiana was there and committed, as you mentioned, Gary. There were three partners in this. It was our investment. The state of Indiana made some tremendous investments in Huntingburg, and the private industry here in Du Bois County followed along and made sure those investments were secure.
Huntingburg Mayor Denny Spinner, thanks for joining us. A lot going on in your community in Du Bois County, and we'll look forward to coming down and visiting you in the future. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Gary. Appreciate the opportunity.
All right.
The idea for the company Passageways was hatched almost 20 years ago in a Purdue residence hall. Since then, it has evolved into a major player in the virtual meeting platform space. Chief Executive Officer Perun Chadha joined us to talk about the company and what it's doing to help businesses during the pandemic.
Give us a quick thumbnail of the company. And again, as I mentioned, started really as an idea about 17 years ago back at Purdue University.
That's right. It's a tale of two phases here. So we started at Purdue, me and my co-founder, Chris, in the space of enterprise secure collaboration. And then in the last 5-6 years, we've transitioned and pivoted into board collaboration. So board meetings and, you know, all the workflow that is related to board meetings. That's what's fueling our growth in the last, you know, 5-6 years.
Yes. And in particular, you have a couple of products, but in particular, your onboard product, which is what we're talking about here, is what's fueling growth. Talk about that and how the pandemic and the dynamics there really have, you know, helped to feed into some new business opportunities.
Absolutely. I'm happy to talk about it. So onboard is currently being used by nearly 2,000 organizations worldwide. We have more than 500 banks and financial institutions using our product. You know, top universities in the world, including Purdue University, several public companies, very large hospital systems, you know, more than 150 hospitals using our system, lots of nonprofits using our product for running their board meeting and anything around the board workflow. We continue to actually see a lot of growth in our business, not just in US and, you know, and Indiana. You know, we are proud to be working with organizations like CICP, as well as Newfields locally here, but we also work with organizations across the world. In UK, we have a 15 people team working diligently to really build business in financial, healthcare, government, and nonprofit sectors. And you know, the pandemic sort of, you know, has been, you know, a net accelerant for our business. I don't want to be sounding Pollyannish about it, but at the same time, every board meeting recently has been an electronic digital experience. Mm-hmm. So organizations that were traditionally not going to do much, do nothing was their option, have been forced into looking at board management platforms.
Yep,
and Perun, driving the growth.
Yep, only have about 30 seconds. Want to make sure we get to this because you're growing, 130 employees or so now, but you're looking to add more through the end of the first quarter of next year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So our hiring goals are aggressive. We continue to look for more talent. You know, obviously, Indianapolis is a great place to attract some of this talent. So we are looking to add at least, you know, 40 to 45 people in this year, and then more in Q1, about 65 people by the end of Q1 is our target.
Very good. A growing company, to be sure. Passageways, based now in Indianapolis. Perun Chadha, the CEO and co-founder as well. Thanks for joining us. Congratulations on the growth. We look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Built in 1930, Gary Roosevelt has a proud and rich Hoosier history. At one point, it was one of the largest, mostly black high schools in the Midwest. Now it's on Indiana's most endangered list. Around Indiana, reporter Mary Rachel Redman has more from Gary on efforts to save the historic high school.
City shouldn't let it go. They should never let it go because this is history.
They always told us that we just had to be better than everybody else because we were all black.
Gary, Indiana in the 1920s was a booming city of steel. Even nationally recognized for its innovative public schools. But not everyone was welcome in certain classrooms. And when the city attempted to integrate a few black students to its all-white Emerson High School in 1927, It ended in disaster.
White students walked out of Emerson after attempts of integration, and the school corporation, in reaction, decided to build this school, and then it went on to again be a beacon of Black excellence in the city of Gary.
Roosevelt High School was built in 1930, and it was one of only three all-African American high schools in the state of Indiana, a source of pride for many residents here in Gary.
So this was our center of culture, and many of the city people that were in positions of authority or let's say influence were Rooseveltians. But this school was always considered a sacred spot.
But this sacred spot has fallen on hard times. A faulty heating system coupled with a polar vortex in 2019 caused a series of pipes to burst. And it was the final straw that closed the 90-year-old historical building for good.
With the cleanup of the water damage and mold, it is $8 to $15 million. So that's just to get it back to how it was operating previously.
From the school district's perspective, we're not planning on opening the school for a school district, but I don't see that the school district would ever use it for a school again.
There's that historical aspect of it.
Gary Mayor Jerome Prince is all too familiar with the rich history of Roosevelt. And in an effort to rebuild his city, and perhaps Roosevelt, he's turned to Gary's most famous family of singers for a little help.
I've had at least a few conversations with members of the Jackson family who have a renewed interest in helping to reimagine, as we call it, the city of Gary, which includes at least some desire to help facilitate a renovation on the Roosevelt School site. My primary focus is to rebuild the city.
So is this part of the original structure?
Yeah, this is the original structure.
This is home to me, yeah. I hate to see it in this condition.
And while the school undoubtedly served as a point of pride for Gary's Black community in its heyday, its strong alumni base is determined to keep the Roosevelt legacy alive for future generations.
We are interested in being involved in whatever happens to the building, that we are staying ready to assist them and mainly be some part of the decision making.
To the Gary Roosevelt squad.
Youngsters don't know the history of Roosevelt, and I think they should know about the only Black school at that time. It's a place that I always cherish.
Mary Rachel Redmond, Inside Indiana Business.
COVID-19 has hit Black and minority-owned business owners especially hard. An alarming number of business shutdowns led local businesswoman Tamara Cypress to form Black Business Matters, an initiative to help Black-owned businesses better connect with the community. She came on the show with details.
Your background, you have substantial background in the corporate world and decided to form Black Businesses Matter. Talk about why you did it and what really this program, which has really begun to get some traction early, what it's all about.
Absolutely. So Black Businesses Matter is a free program focused on storytelling and networking, specifically for those smaller Black businesses that would typically be overlooked or just starting. All businesses matter, especially as these small businesses are struggling at this time. However, we're looking at the data that suggests about 41% of Black businesses have been permanently impacted or closed since COVID. So we wanted to do our small part, leading from where we are, to help these Black businesses with this campaign and really showcase who they are and what great services they have to provide.
Yeah, so really you're focused on two areas, as I understand it, with these businesses. There's a marketing and branding, if you will, a piece, but also very importantly, a networking piece as well.
Absolutely. So I always pause with the logo. It's bright. It's bold. You see that heart integrated with that unity fist. And by design, the heart is at the center of this because we want people to know that their heart needs to be front and center for us to really meet those equitable changes that we're looking for. Black Businesses Matter, for those businesses that sign up, get this digital logo as a self-identifier on the existing platform so they can automatically add it to their social media, website, and email. For those that have brick and mortar, we also created window clings so that they can add this to their business as a self-identifier as a Black business. But really the heart of this campaign is the storytelling series. And we're so excited that we are partnering with the Indianapolis Recorder to help showcase profiles, because we really believe that people want to work with businesses and support businesses that they know. So we're taking the time to personalize Black businesses, really humanize who they are beyond just how to find them. So we are doing showcases with the Indy Recorder. So that gives our Black businesses an opportunity to showcase their who they are. And then also they get to host an episode of the 317 Experience, which is a podcast that I happen to host with the Indianapolis Urban League. And those two assets, yes, they're marketing pieces that they probably wouldn't have an opportunity to do, but really taking it a step further with that networking series, we're introducing our Black businesses to people and leaders in the community who want to help their business grow.
Yeah.
So we just launched the Power Shifting Talk, which is an opportunity for businesses to network with people across the city.
Okay, Tamara, I only have 30 seconds, but the early response seems to be pretty good. Talk about how many companies, a lot of sole proprietors connecting with the organization. Talk about the early response.
So we're really using this opportunity to get to know the businesses. Very quickly, we were able to find out that 58% of them need help with social media. 43% of them need help with their website. And 40% of them, more than 40% of them, are not certified with the city or state. And that's important because if their goals are to work with the city or state, they wouldn't show up on any database or email. And we want to make sure that we're connecting them with the right people and helping fill out those gaps beyond just marketing.
Tamara Cypress is the founder of Black Businesses Matter. Tamara, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck with the initiative. You're off to a great start. We look forward to following up at some point in the near term.
Thank you.
All right.
Remember, you can catch Inside Indiana Business Television on stations throughout the state every weekend. Head to InsideIndianaBusiness.com to check listings. The effects of the pandemic reach well beyond physical health. Whether it's anxiety over isolation or stress about finances, COVID-19 has caused a spike in mental health-related issues as well. Indiana Family and Social Services Administration Secretary Jennifer Sullivan joined Kylie Valletta in the Business of Health to talk about the Indiana 211 Be Well Crisis Hotline.
Okay, so callers can pick up the phone and talk to a counselor 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Explain why the state saw a need to start this helpline and staff it around the clock.
Well, we saw indicators very early on that the mental health and well-being of Hoosiers was suffering as a result of the things that we asked people to do in our pandemic response. Not only do those with existing mental health conditions need additional support, but also those who've never really had to deal with anxiety, depression, or the consequences of being disconnected from their support networks. Add economic uncertainty to fear for the health of you and your family, and it requires a comprehensive, easy to access, and free resource. The helpline is a part of a huge package of mental health supports that we've put together, including telehealth, substance use disorder policy changes, the Be Well Indiana website, and more. And even though it's not enough, it's a huge start in making progress and very promising.
Right, and convenient. The crisis line is part of Indiana 211. And in July, the state brought 211 under the FSSA umbrella. So that sounds like a policy detail to the average person. What's the significance of that?
Well, our pledge to Hoosiers is to deliver human services with compassion and equity. And adding 211 to our family of services for confidential, free connectivity to resources, or sometimes just a kind person to talk with, is a powerful step in realizing that goal. Since our entire portfolio is shaped by the social drivers of health, bringing that community, state, and federal connection into the fabric of our agency was a natural next step.
Okay, we've been putting some stats up on the screen from the helpline. More than 1,200 calls in just the first 5 weeks. Average call is about 20 minutes. And the top two distresses, isolation and withdrawal, and fearfulness and anxiety. What are your big takeaways as you see some of those results and some of the stats from the crisis line in just the first 5 weeks or so?
Well, first, I'm so heartened that people are using the resource and that we were able to quickly build a diverse team of highly trained experts to field those calls in partnership with Mental Health America. Second, I'm really struck by the acuity of the calls. People are hurting, and we need each other now in really profound ways. People are calling in acute crisis, not just chronic needs that need additional support. And lastly, a critical key to our recovery is going to be accounting for the trauma this pandemic has wreaked on our mental health and mitigating its long-term effects on our overall health. And this helpline, I believe, will play a part in keeping us informed about what is happening in people's lives in real time and how we can and should respond in our global mental health network.
Also close to your heart are health inequities that have been worsened by the pandemic. Does the crisis line help address those at all?
It does. The pandemic has put a microscope on the gaps that are present for achieving equitable health outcomes in Indiana. And this has been a priority for Dr. Box at the health department and me even prior to these events. We know that a stress on an imperfect system doesn't make it better without restructuring the system itself. And I believe that our renewed focus on data and understanding the overarching health needs of Hoosiers is really critical. Not just healthcare like doctors and medicines, but things like safe housing, access to food, education, dismantling racism and ending stigmas. And the Be Well Crisis Line is part of that overarching mission, and I hope can act as a bridge as part of 211 to not only fill needs now, but build healthier and more equitable communities moving forward. I would also encourage you to check out our new Health and Wellbeing Atlas. It's on our FSSA website for more about how we're using data to drive this work for real people having real problems every day.
We only have about 30 seconds left, but as you look at this mental health crisis, is there a message you could share with businesses or private companies?
Absolutely. Look out for your employees. They may not tell you they're hurting if you don't ask, so please ask. Do you feel safe? How can I help you today? Would you like to talk? Be kind and patient with all the uncertainty that still exists, and understand that people may not be acting fully like themselves right now. A little grace will go a long way. If you see red flags, don't let them go. Make a referral, call 211, and you may just save a life.
Okay, and we mentioned bewellindiana.org, also a good resource. Even if people don't feel like they need to call the crisis line, they can always jump on that website. Dr. Sullivan, thanks for being on the show today. I know this is an ongoing long-term issue, so I'm sure we'll be checking back in with you.
Thanks for having me.
P.R. Mallory & Company was once a major hub for employment and economic activity on the Near East Side of Indianapolis. The former battery factory sat vacant for 30 years until a $38 million remediation turned it into the home of two schools. Purdue Polytechnic principal Shatoya Ward and Paramount Englewood Middle School principal Darius Sawyers joined us in our Eye on Education segment.
The P.R. Mallory building for many years was, again, this economic hub, a vibrant center of activity, sat vacant for many, many years. That is changing now in a big way, $38 million renovation on this project. Two unique educational institutions. Shatoya, I'll start with you first. Give us the model for Purdue Polytechnic High School.
We are preparing our students for jobs that doesn't exist yet and for a society of the future.
Mm-hmm. And you really focus, too, on underserved students in the population.
Most definitely. We are catering to the minorities and underserved representative of a population here in the community and the city.
And Darius, Paramount Englewood has three campuses. You're one of three campuses. Now, talk about the kind of the business model, if you will, for Paramount Schools of Excellence.
Definitely. At Paramount, our mission is to inspire learning through an unparalleled academic approach and to transform communities by changing lives. So that, you know, we really focus on the fundamentals of academics to expose students to real-world problems to help them get ready for jobs of the future.
Yeah. I mentioned the P.R. Mallory building. What does it mean for the two organizations? I'll direct this to you, Darius, but to be in that facility together. Talk about what that really means.
Well, it means so much. I think about, you know, what this site used to be historically. You know, at one point in time was a baseball field. Mm-hmm. At one point in time used to be an amusement park. Then fast forward to it being just a science hub at the Mallory Building, where they were in here, some of the top engineers in the country developing battery and lithium technology. To even fast forward to 2020, when it is now the house of Paramount Englewood Middle School and Purdue High School. And it's just so powerful that students at Paramount Englewood can start with us in middle school, transition on and have direct admittance into Purdue Polytechnic High School, and students at Purdue Polytechnic traveling straight into ultimately West Lafayette at Purdue University. Like that pop pipeline on the Near East Side of Indianapolis is powerful.
Yeah, and certainly a big impact on that Near East Side community. Shatoya, talk about the fact that Purdue Polytechnic, and for that matter, Paramount as well, you really attract students from that immediate area, from those neighborhoods.
Most definitely. Two-thirds of our population is in the what we call Indianapolis Public School Center Township area codes. And so one-third of our population literally come, they are within walking distance. They are walkers. So they are within walking distance of the school and they attend our school. And so we are really proud that we serve the students that are within the community, and we only hope to increase as the years come.
Yeah, and the fact that the high school is there as well as the middle school, that provides some, I think, some mentoring opportunities, right, for some of the high school students.
Most definitely. And that is one of the priorities that we had, is to have some partnerships with Paramount when it comes to our students, you know, working together. We definitely are looking at working together with some projects, but most importantly, just that mentorship and tutoring. Purdue University has enjoyed the priority where they've been able to give us some resources available to that. And so they are really excited about the partnership with Paramount. And the pipeline as well.
Yeah. Darius, as we wrap up, also want to talk about, give people a feel for that facility out there. It's also got a bunker building, if you will. There's Purdue Robotics. There's a hydroponic operation there. So lots of different things going on inside those four walls there.
Yeah, definitely. You know, when I think about, again, just, you know, the space and what it's being used for, like we're excited to see the development of that additional building where a separate building will be on site on the campus running their hydroponics building and the Purdue High School students using that space as well as a robotics space. So, you know, just a lot of life that's being given back to the Mallory site.
All right. Innovation in education, to be sure. Also a transformation taking place at an iconic, what was once an iconic manufacturing operation. Shatoya Ward, the principal at Purdue Polytechnic High School. Also Darius Sawyers, the principal at Paramount Englewood Middle School. Thank you both for joining us and good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
It was a big week in Indiana sports last week, with the Indiana Pacers making a change at head coach and Takuma Sato taking the checkered flag at the Indy 500. Also, the Colts are heading back to the field. Inside Indiana sports contributor Bill Benner joined us for perspective.
We'll start out with your former employees, the Pacers Sports and Entertainment. But the Indiana Pacers, unfortunately, swept out of the first round by the Miami Heat, and then made some headlines, certainly, by letting go head coach Nate McMillan, which a lot of people were surprised about.
Well, you know, they had announced earlier at the conclusion of the regular season that he had been extended. My understanding is that his contract had officially expired on July 1st. They had to extend him to at least get him through the bubble, and then a further decision would be made. Of course, Nate has done a heck of a job with this team historically during the regular season, but during the playoffs, quite frankly, they've been a disappointment. With the only series that hasn't been swept was a couple years ago when they took Cleveland to seven games in the first round. So that's, you know, despite all the joy that was created during the regular season, especially before the COVID breakdown, you got to follow it up with some postseason success, and that certainly hasn't happened. And, hey, I like Nate. I think he's a solid coach, and I think he will land on his feet.
Yeah. Okay, that sets up what could be a very interesting offseason. First of all, from the coaching standpoint, Nate McMillan's successor, where do you think the Pacers look?
I wouldn't be surprised if they would look for somebody, not necessarily with head coaching experience, but somebody, a younger guy who has, or even a female, wouldn't rule that out, but somebody that has good offensive expertise and background. I think, you know, the NBA is going small ball. Mm-hmm. Everybody pushes the ball. They want to shoot the threes. They want to get up and down. And then I think they're going to have to, you know, whomever that new coach is going to be, they're going to have to look at to see where they stand pat. All the players are under contract except one, Justin Holiday. So how they handle the roster, whether they make trades, Miles Turner's name comes up, whether Victor Oladipo gets back to 100%. A lot of major questions in an offseason for a team, again, that had a pretty successful regular season.
Yeah, it will be interesting to watch indeed. Shifting gears, I guess literally, to an extent, to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. The delayed Indianapolis 500, a lot of anticipation, obviously, was run without fans, NBC with the broadcast. How do you think things played out?
I thought they did as good a job, given the incredible circumstances, as they could have done. Yes, the race did have a lot of yellow flags. It had a number of incidents associated with it. Thankfully, everybody walked away because some of those accidents were pretty severe, especially the one involving Spencer Pigot at the mm-hmm. end. But again, I thought they did a great job. I thought what they did with the drivers before the race, mm-hmm. the shout-outs to ticket holders, mm-hmm. Going around the town of Speedway and letting them personally interact with fans, I thought that was absolutely inspired. And, Gary, I had no objection to what happened at the end. I was disappointed like everybody else. Yeah. You don't want to see a race end under the yellow. But given the damage to the track and that attenuator and what it would have taken to fix it, they made the right call.
Yeah, only 30 seconds left, Bill. But the Colts, you know, they had a preseason, played against themselves at Lucas Oil Stadium, kind of a dress rehearsal. But their season opener coming up in just a couple weeks.
Yeah, September 13th at Jacksonville. Again, a lot of questions about the NFL, whether it will be able to move mm-hmm. forward. With or without fans. Some teams are saying no fans. Some teams are saying some fans, including the Colts. So a lot of things still to be determined as we look forward with great anticipation to the NFL season.
Yeah, three big sports stories, and they'll continue to be stories well into the fall and beyond. Bill Benner, as always, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Gary.
And finally this week, the pandemic has led to thousands of job losses throughout Indiana. In Marion County alone, more than 120,000 people filed for unemployment between March and June. Employee Indy and Ascend Indiana have launched a new resource for displaced workers. Ascend Indiana CEO Jason Cloth, Employee Indy CEO Angela Carr-Klitsch, and Indianapolis Deputy Mayor of Economic Development Angela Smith-Jones explained how the program works during a special insiders panel.
Angela, I'll start with you to kind of tee things up. That number, 120,000 in Marion County out of work, is a staggering number. But talk about the dynamics, what we're working with here, and why this plan really was devised.
Hi, Gary. So what has occurred, as you had clearly indicated, is the very beginning of this year, we actually had really strong and unemployment numbers, 3.2%. But as the COVID crisis hit, we were really faced with astounding numbers, devastating numbers, 120,000 in Marion County. And like currently, we're about 1 million across the state of Indiana. And at the peak of the COVID crisis, the mayor, Joe Hogsett, realized how important it was for us to look ahead. So he called upon the Regional Workforce Partnership, which is a combination, a collaborative of state agencies, non-for-profits, employers, and others that come together on a regular basis to discuss employment and talent in the city and in the central region. So the mayor called upon the Regional Workforce Partnership and said, gave us a call and a charge to please lean in and look at what opportunities we would have to do a rapid reemployment plan in response to the impact of the displaced workers due to the COVID crisis. And so going forward, this is what we've been able to put together, this rapid reemployment response plan. And we've actually just made the announcement earlier this week yep. with the mayor, Angie Carr-Klitsch, and Jason. So things are going well so far.
All right, Angie, as Angela just mentioned, this rapid reemployment response plan is a centralized initiative, if you will. Talk about how it works and how Marion County, folks in Marion County who work in Marion County, can get engaged.
I'd be pleased to. So really, since 2019, Employ Indy and Ascend have been partnering to support youth and dislocated workers connect to employment. And because of this, and when the mayor called us to action in March to focus our efforts to ensure as many residents of Marion County were reemployed quickly as a result of the COVID-19 crisis, frankly, we were in a unique position to mobilize quickly. And time is and was of essence, particularly as expanded unemployment insurance benefits expired at the end of July. So it's been a work in progress and lots of hours spent, but it's really exciting to come here and speak to Employ Indy and Ascend, launching a free online tool to connect individuals with employment opportunities and the additional resources they might need to help advance in their career. The tool itself is adapted from the Ascend network. It's a proven platform, and it can connect job seekers with individualized support to get ready for their next job. So if job seekers who live in Marion County or want to work in Marion County visit the website www.employindy.org/rapid-reemployment-response, they can get started in three easy steps. Mm-hmm. So they would create a login. They're going to answer a few short questions, and you'll be redirected to the most relevant resource. And you're going to receive personalized support. I do not want to overstate that, because it's really important to have the technology feature, but it's really important to have the human touch as well.
Yeah.
In order to connect to employers, individuals should have a high school degree or equivalency and an updated resume. If the job seeker meets these criteria, they'll be connected to a talent recruiter, either at Employ Indy or Ascend, who's going to learn about their skills and interests and help them begin connecting to employers. Other job seekers will be connected to Work One Indy, Yes Indy, or community-based organization for individualized career services, right, resume development, subsidized mm-hmm. education and training, courtesy of the state and the federal government, and of course, job search assistance. So there is no wrong door for any job seeker to utilize this platform.
Okay, Jason, key two, and Angie, I think, touched on it, but this is for both employees and employers as well, right?
Absolutely. So in addition to residents, it's very clear that employers have been adversely affected by the pandemic, and some industries are still performing quite well, adding jobs. When we look at e-commerce, life science, manufacturing, other sectors and industries have been more adversely or negatively impacted, leisure and hospitality. They might have hiring freezes or rethinking their organizational structures altogether. And so while the original Ascend Network was designed for early in career roles and early in career talent, those that had bachelor's degrees or associate degrees, Ascend alongside Employ Indy has really adapted that technology to serve job seekers from a variety of educational and experiential backgrounds. So that now the Ascend Network is truly a one-stop shop for employers that are looking for talent and talent that are seeking employment opportunities. And what's so critical is that while most of the focus right now is on resuming operations safely from a public health perspective, we really need to begin beginning the process to focus on the future of our economy. And so one of the unique aspects of the network is that we'll be solely focused on jobs that pay $13 an hour, those that lead to good long-term wages. And this will really help to ensure that those employed through the network are, you know, on the path to a career that enables them to take care of themselves and to take care of their families. So it's been very exciting over the last 48 hours. We've gone from 400 employers to more than 450 employers in just that two-day time span. We have hundreds of open positions on the network and thousands of active job seekers of all educational and experiential backgrounds seeking employment. And I think lastly, I would just say that ultimately, to ensure the success of our city and our region, we need to begin the process of rebuilding, you know, a post-pandemic economy, one that is focused on serving all of our residents, especially those that have lacked economic opportunity yep. in the past, so that we can ensure that our residents are prosperous.
Very good. The Rapid Reemployment Response Program is live now for Marion County residents or those who work in Marion County. Jason Kloth with Ascend Indiana, Angie Carr-Klitsch with Employee Indiana, Angela Smith-Jones, City of Indianapolis. Thank you, one and all. I know we'll be following up on this story in the weeks and months ahead. Thanks for joining us.
That wraps up this week's Inside Indiana Business Television podcast. Remember, you can find all of this week's TV segments, as well as the top business news from throughout the state, at InsideIndianaBusiness.com. While you're there, you can also subscribe to our platform of free e-newsletters. This is Andy Ober for Inside Indiana Business.